I thought I would do this today and this evening is make it real easy on myself. I'm just going to read from Brihat Bhagavatamrita because in Gitanagari a good number of devotees from Chicago went for that weekend, and I heard a lot of appreciation of the topics that we covered, but it took a lot of time to prepare to distill all of that information, and I haven't had the time to in order to continue to basically just give you an overview and summary and the high points. I haven't had time to do that. But I thought hearing directly the translations and the commentary, we can continue where we left off, and will be another encouragement to get absorbed in Brihat Bhagavatamrita when the publication finally comes out. What I have here is was passed through several editings in the pre-publication phase, and the for those of you that aren't familiar with the text, I'll just give a quick summary. Brihat Bhagavatamrita is a book that's written by Sanatan Goswami, and
Sanatan Goswami's
picture is on the altar on our right, on the bottom level of the altar. There's six Goswamis of Vrindavan. They're known by that, the six Goswamis of Vrindavan, and their immediate followers of Lord Chaitanya, whose picture is just above them, the second level on the altar. And the six Goswamis were the principal personalities who reestablished the places of Krishna's pastimes that had been literally lost and almost forgotten after the passage of some 4,500 years. A lot can happen in 4,500 years. So, they were assigned that service, establish where the places of Krishna's pastimes took place, and write literatures describing the science of devotional service. Writing and establishing holy places and exhibiting to the world very, very, very exalted levels of pure devotion, both by their conduct and just their transcendental ecstatic exhibitions of bhakti. Lots that can be said about Sanatana Goswami, but he's the author, he's the chief, the eldest amongst the six Goswamis, and during his presence was respected as senior most amongst them. So he wrote several books that are very, very prominent in our Gaudiya Vaishnava tradition. One of them is a compendium of rituals that are to be observed, or details of procedure to observe, different functions, ceremonies, marriage, initiation, sannyas, deity worship, etc., etc., etc. It's a how-to manual. And Bhagavatamrita is another of his very well-known writings. And he wrote a commentary on that Bhagavatamrita. In one sense, Bhagavatamrita is a very unique, maybe even esoteric commentary on Srimad Bhagavatam, because of the context at the very beginning of the book. There's a Mangalacharana section where glories are offered to the Supreme Lord, and the purpose of the book is stated, and it's stated that the purpose of the book is to describe the essence of Srimad Bhagavatam. And the narration begins with Jaimini Rishi having a discussion with Janamejaya. Janamejaya is the son of Maharaj Parikshit and the grandson of the Pandavas. So Janamejaya is hearing the glories of his ancestors, his father and his grandparents, or his grandfather and relatives. And he's hearing it in the form of a narration of Mahabharata. And as the beginning of this narration explains, it appears that there were more than one Mahabharats available. One of them was Srila Vyasadeva's Mahabharata, but Jaimini Rishi also had access to another accepted and bona fide version of Mahabharata. It's a itihasa, it's an epic narration of the history surrounding the Pandavas. So when Janamejaya hears it, he becomes very ecstatic, because he's saying that it describes in a very confidential way understandings about Krishna that he never heard described in that way before. So he asks Jaimini Rishi, is there anything more that you can narrate like this? So Jaimini says, yes, there is a supplement. There's a kila. It's something like when somebody composes a book, there's a compendium or an addendum at the end. It's supplementary augmenting of the main text. He said, yes, there's a kila, and I will describe that to you now. And that's what Brihad Bhagavatamrita is. It's that section that's augmenting the Mahabharata that Jaimini Rishi narrated. And it begins with a description of a scene in Prayag, Allahabad, at the Dashashvamedha Ghat, a very special place where sacrifices are performed, and there's a scene of a group of sages who during the month of Magh have taken bath at that Dashashvamedha Ghat right near the temple of Lord Madhav, and they've done so because there's a verse in Padma Purana that says that there's nothing that pleases Lord Madhava more than and lists other things that they could do. Nothing pleases them more than one who takes bath on the full moon day of the month of Magha. And so they've done that, and they're, after having taken their bath, they're having a little sangha amongst themselves, like sadhus will do sometimes, and appreciating how fortunate they are to get this very special benediction, to be at this particular place at this particular time, and the indication in scripture, and please Lord Madhava in this way, how fortunate they are. And as humble and saintly persons will do, one is appreciating the exalted nature of the other, and the other is appreciating the exalted nature of the other, and how fortunate you are, how elevated you are, how wonderful you are, how, so they're carrying on like that. And just at that time, one householder, Brahmana, arrives on the scene, and right by the god itself, he sets up a little temporary altar for the purpose of conducting an abhishek of his Shalagram Shiva. And just rather than going into so much detail, elaborately is described the procedure that he followed and the ecstasy that he was exhibiting as this was going on. He would stand up and just begin to dance right in the middle of the ceremony and clap his hands like a one-man band. He was just so happy conducting this abhishek and big anukut offering, because the brahmana came with a whole entourage. Many, many, many people were there cooking things and readying things, and big offering to the deity after the abhishek. And he offered opulent jewels and ornaments and cloth and so many things. And when the whole abhishek was over, he was in ecstasy, and there was a big crowd of people assembled. So he distributed very charitably everything that he had offered to the deity, all the prasad and all the ornaments and jewels and cloth, and everyone was detailed, it's described, but he fed all the living entities, all the creatures with his own hand, even the insects and the birds and the dogs, and everyone was fed. And then when all that was completed, he and his family members, they sat and they took prasad. And when the whole procedure was over, he came before the deity with folded hands and offered some special prayers, requesting that the deity accept the fruit of any piety that may have been accrued, that you be the enjoyer of that piety, indicating specifically that this was not done, it was done in a selfless mode of devotion, not that by these proper and beneficial activities that his hope or his expectation was that he would increase his stockpile of piety, thereby increasing his capacity for pious results, thereby increasing his wealth, prestige, and influence in society. He simply wanted to please the Supreme Lord in selfless service. So, amongst the sages that were assembled, one of them happened to be Narada Muni. So seeing this whole situation, Narada Muni couldn't control himself any longer. He just jumped up and started exclaiming, "You are such a recipient of the mercy of the Supreme Lord," and carried on like this and described in detail what he saw. And in response to Narada's enthusiasm, the brahmana replied absolutely the reverse. "I'm not at all the recipient of the mercy of the Lord," and gave his reasons why, and then explained that "you're saying I've made such opulent offerings, but hardly do I have any wealth in comparison to very, very wealthy persons, and my sacrifices, anyway, so on and so on. He minimizes his own standing, but then refers Narada to another who is really at a very elevated platform of receiving the mercy of the Lord. He sends him to see one king in South India. He glorifies the king in so many ways. And hearing the glories of the king, Narada becomes very excited to go meet the king, and he zooms off to go meet the king. When he meets the king, just as it was described, he experiences the king, who is performing a royal ceremony, a great sacrifice to his deity. It's a very nice description, actually, that the deity, most deities are in the likeness of the form of the Lord, but this deity was so very, very special, one couldn't tell even that it was a deity. It actually appeared to be the Lord, but motionless, standing as if in a deity posture or pose. And anyway, the very similar narration with different details of the opulence of the worship and who was there and what was going on and the ceremonial functions and the grandeur and the charity. And Narada becomes overwhelmed and runs forward to greet the king and exclaims, "You are such a recipient of the mercy of the Lord." So it's a pattern that repeats itself. Doesn't become boring at all, although it's a repeated pattern, glorification of a devotee. And in the face of such total glorification from a person so qualified as Narada, naturally invokes maximum humility on the part of each person who Narada approaches. So the king denies that he has that kind of merit and gives his reasons why, and refers him to the devas. So that ends the first chapter, and there's a whole chapter on the devas. So Narada goes to see Indra, because that was the specific reference given by the king. And when he goes to Indra Loka, just as was described, there is the Supreme Lord as the younger brother of Indra, who is there receiving the worship of Indra personally. And because Indra is the king of heaven, he's also seated in the throne. Anyway, the details of the description of Indra Loka are pretty fascinating. And after Vamana and his wife Kirti Devi leave, Indra follows them for some distance, just in respect. And as they retire, then he comes back, and Indra is approached very enthusiastically by Narada. "You are such a recipient of the Lord's mercy," and glorifies him. And Indra can't tolerate the glorification and begins deprecating himself about how this isn't true at all. "You have no idea of my shortcomings and mistakes and my lustiness and my..." So it gives all of the explanations of his less than exalted qualifications, but then tells Narada that amongst the devas, your father is actually the most exalted. He describes the glories of Lord Brahma, and hearing the long list of the glories of Lord Brahma, Narada runs to greet Brahma and Brahma Loka, pattern repeats itself, glorification, self-deprecation, and Brahma refers him to Lord Shiva. And the particular abode of Lord Shiva that he starts to go to is Kailash, and Brahma redirects him to go to Shivaloka, another abode of Lord Brahma, this one being beyond the coverings of the universe. And then there's a detailed description of a very complex subject matter, and that is the various abodes that the various manifestations of Lord Shiva occupy, and the different functions. We're getting through the course of this narration. I left out something very important at the very beginning. Yeah, something that's very important at the very beginning is Jaimini is narrating Shijanamejaya, so he wants to hear more about what he just heard, the Mahabharata narration. So he says that I'll explain this kila. So the kila that he explains begins with a scene where Srimad Bhagavatam has just been narrated by Shukadeva Goswami to Maharaj Pariksit, who is Janamejaya's father. So after hearing the complete narration of Srimad Bhagavatam, at least according to this description, the 7 days had not passed yet. There was still a little bit of time left. And so in the audience, the mother of Maharaj Pariksit is there. And Maharaj Pariksit notices that she's weeping very, very intensely, knowing that very soon her son is going to die, unavoidably. And so out of the crowd she comes and approaches her son, and her son gives her words to pacify her, explaining that he is completely beyond fear, and the words that he's heard from Shukadeva Goswami have completely pacified his mind and elevated him to the position of transcendental realization, so she need not worry for him. So then she asks her son, well, if it's had such an effect upon you, can you tell me what it is that you heard from him, so I will also become pacified like you? And he responds by saying that normally in a moment like this, one would give one's full attention to the Supreme Lord in total concentration. But because your question is so wonderful and the subject matter is so wonderful, I'll answer your question. But there's very little time. It took 7 days to narrate all this. So I'll have to explain it to you just in the essence form. In the essence form, I'll tell you in the form of a story. And then the story ensues of Prayag, the Shashvamedha Ghat, and the assembly of the sages. So what we're hearing is Maharaj Pariksit's understanding of what he heard from Shukadeva Goswami in the form of Srimad Bhagavatam or Bhagavad Purana in a capsule summary in the form of a story. So the story is there, it certainly holds one's attention, especially as we get further along, you'll see it gets really interesting, spellbinding. But in the course of this, the narrating of the story, then so many, in a subtle way, so many fine and detailed points of etiquette and theology and siddhanta, so many things are explained. in a very wonderful way. Very wonderful way. Transcendental symphony. That's really wonderful. So these detailed understandings of the position of the various manifestations of Lord Shiva, it's a very intricate subject matter, and it's presented very simply in the course of the text and then in the commentary by Sanatana Goswami. So the hearing this glorification of Lord Shiva from Lord Brahma, Narada takes off, penetrates through the coverings of the universe and goes beyond the Brahmanda, the shell of the universe, into the spiritual sky and enters the abode of Lord Shiva, known as Shiva Loka, and is described. Basically, the cosmology is that it's beyond the material coverings and situated in the spiritual sky, but not yet in the realm of Vaikuntha or Haridam. And when he reaches there, Lord Shiva is worshipping Mahapurusha, as we find in the Vedic hymns. Sahasra Shirsha Purusha is the thousand-headed Lord who presides in the spiritual realm, in this realm of Shiva Loka. So the same thing happens. The glories that he heard, he sees, and then he approaches Lord Shiva and starts to glorify him as being none different than the Supreme. And Lord Shiva is in such a state of ecstatic devotion that it doesn't fully register yet what Narada is saying. He just looks at him and holds his arm and says, "Narada, what are you talking about?" He's not regained his full external consciousness yet. He's been absorbed in this ecstatic worship of Mahapurusha. Anyway, he carries on. Narada glorifies more and glorifies more, and Lord Shiva tells him to be quiet because you're being offensive in the ways that you're speaking. So Narada feels that he's made some offense and speaks very softly some further glorifications, and Lord Shiva corrects him. And so rather than going into the detail all over again, you can listen to the tapes. But he speaks in a very, very humble way about himself and glorifies the residents of Vaikuntha. And so the abode of Haridam, just as we find in Brahma Samhita, Devi Maheshu Haridama Suteshu Teshu. So the above, this Devi Dham is in the region where we are, in the material world. And above that, Devi Dham is Mahesh Dham, which has different residential quarters, different abodes or lokas. And above that is Haridam. So he recommends that he goes to Haridam. And then he gets more specific and says, even amongst the residents of... Parvati says, when you go to Vaikuntha, make sure you just go directly and speak with Lakshmi, consort of Narayan, because there's no one as confidential in his entourage as her. and Lord Shiva goes for a little walk down the road with with Narada and says, let me speak something privately to you. And he begins to glorify Prahlad by saying that Prahlad is such an exalted resident of Vaikuntha that in his presence he was able to pacify Lord Nrisimhadev when even Lakshmi, the goddess of fortune, was not able to pacify Lord Nrisimhadev. And then he quotes some verses where Lord Nrisimhadev glorifies Prahlad, that even more dear to me than my own self, or any of my abode, or any of my entourage, and he specifically mentions Garuda and even the goddess of fortune. No one is as dear to me as you, Prahlad. And there are several scriptures that indicate the same thing. So he said, actually, you should go see Prahlad. And don't tell Parvati where you're going, because she wouldn't like to hear me speaking this way. She's a dear friend of Lakshmi. And just go see Prahlad. So he goes to Sutala and sees Prahlad. And we ended in Gita Navari with a summary of the situation that Prahlad was in when Narada arrived, and the glorification of Prahlad that Narada was making, and being particularly appreciative of Prahlad Maharaj. I was relishing this section very much. But then, as the refrain goes, Prahlad doesn't accept at all the glorification that Narada gives, and speaks in extreme moods of humility about himself, describing his shortcomings and limitations and the inappropriate hyperbole of glorification that Narada has given to him. And like, for example, Prahlad achieved perfection. There's 9 processes of devotional service. They begin with Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu, Smaranam. So Prahlad achieved perfection through Smaranam, constant remembrance of the Supreme Lord. Due to that constant remembrance of the Supreme Lord, he was always protected by the Supreme Lord. So much so that his demoniac father, Hiranyakashipu, could not harm him, even with all of his powers. Just couldn't harm him. So Prahlad says about himself, what is the use of this remembrance? I don't do any practical service. And as you know, the way of understanding the Supreme Lord is through the medium of serving him. So you should find a resident of Vaikuntha that doesn't just sit and meditate on the Lord, but serves him in the most exalted mood of service. And of course, that's Hanuman. So gradually he begins building a case why Narada should make his next stop to go see Hanuman. There you will find a true recipient of the mercy of the Lord. So that's where we ended up. So I'm going to read some of the verses, and the commentary is essentially, it's Sanatana Goswami's own commentary paraphrased. And it just with some contemporary things added from here and there. And very wonderful language. So Prahlad says, just see how my worship of the Lord has been eclipsed by my attachment to ruling my kingdom and by my ties to family members, servants, and others. For not crying over this in remorse, I should be condemned again and again. When in the Srimad Bhagavatam, when in anticipation of Lord Nrisimhadev's wanting to give a benediction to Prahlad, Prahlad refuses in advance any benediction. He gives his reasons why. He says, all I want to do is be engaged in your service. I want to be situated again and again in the instruction of Narada, how to serve you more favorably. But as for a kingdom, please don't ask me. But so, after several appeals, finally, Prahlad acquiesces, thinking, like he did when he was a young boy in school, if I can induce others from my position of ruling to take to devotional service, then I can maybe do some service for the Supreme Lord. So for that reason, and that reason only, he accepted. But now he's deprecating himself for becoming attached to the kingdom that the Lord repeatedly requested him to take responsibility for. It's just part of this expression of humility of all the devotees involved in this book. Here's the commentary. Narada might suggest that material facilities are dangerous for immature devotees, whereas those who are fully self-realized, like Prahlad, need not fear of becoming distracted from their worship of the Lord. For example, Sudama Brahman had talked about neophyte devotees who lack spiritual insight. Srimad Bhagavatam 10.81.37, and whom the personality of Godhead has to protect from the danger of too much material opulence. But Prahlad is a fully self-realized devotee with mature insight into the true value of the Supreme Lord's devotional service. Mere sense gratification and political power are not going to distract him. As Lord Krishna told King Uchukunda, quote, the intelligence of my unalloyed devotee is never diverted by material blessings. Krishna similarly said to Uddhava, one who has unflinching devotion for me will never be defeated by sense gratification. So, Prahlad is here replying that he has been distracted and deviated from pure devotion, a fact that proves that he never actually received the full mercy of the Supreme Lord. According to Prahlad's lamentation, his concentrated meditation on being protected by the Lord has now become completely eclipsed. He carefully says, eclipsed rather than destroyed, because he knows very well that Bhagavad Bhakti is purely spiritual, it is eternal, and can never be destroyed, only temporarily covered by material contamination of the soul's consciousness. So he's putting himself forward as now an attached person, attached to the kingdom that he's been given, thus eclipsing any mercy he may have received previously. that he gives an argument to substantiate his claim that he's attached and covered. He says, otherwise, why else would I have fought against the renowned Lord at Vishala, as if I had reverted to the low conditioning of my birth? So this is a story, this refers to can't recall which of the Puranas, but there's a detailed description of Prahlad in this position as a king, wanting to see in person Lord Pitavas, the Lord who's residing in the Himalaya mountains, who is dressed in his yellow garment and exhibiting the feature of Lord Vishnu. So he decides to go on a pilgrimage. And as he's going on pilgrimage, he passes through a forested region where he sees a forest dweller, a Bhira personality, who is dressed up like a soldier, a military man, like a king. So he considers, this is a forest dweller, just posing himself to be a king. What a rascal. I want to teach him a lesson so he won't do this imitation activity ever again. So he says to the person, I am going to defeat you to show you a lesson, not to imitate the activities of the royal order. Prepare for combat. And so combat ensues, and neither becomes the victor. And then it goes on for some days, and Prahlad is unable to defeat this heroic fighter. And then what's described is that one morning, as he was traveling, because he's attached to the form of the Lord, he traveled with a deity for worship, and every morning when he would rise in the morning after his morning bath, Prahlad would engage in deity worship. So he was gathering together whatever he could from the forest for the worship of his deity, including forest flowers, and he made a garland for the deity and decorated the deity with the garland. And when he finished with his worship, he looked up and saw his opponent wearing the garland that he had offered to the deity. So then he could understand, this is my Lord. And he rushed forward and fell at his feet and offered profuse prayers for forgiveness for his having engaged in combat against the Lord. And there was some reciprocal words of appreciation, of praise of Prahlad. And then Prahlad posed a question. I'm a Kshatriya, and I've taken this vow that I will defeat you in combat. But that's not possible. I can't defeat you in combat. And even if I could, I wouldn't, now that I know that you are my Lord. So what am I to do? I have this dilemma. I'm a Kshatriya, and I've taken this vow. Now I have to break my vow. I can't break my vow, so what should I do? And the story ends with the Lord saying, my devotee always defeats me by their love. So he's referring to that incident where his covered condition is not allowing him to see the Lord of his life for who he is, as evidence that he's become attached by his becoming a king and ruling and becoming immature consciousness, rather than what we would think, how elevated is Prahlad. He goes to the forest and he sees the Supreme Lord with intimate exchange with him. Prahlad continues, The demons and their teachings are always inclined to bad scholarship about the truth of the self. Because of my association with such demons, even today my understanding is not free from the degraded element of dry speculation. Now, Prahlad's understanding of the self is perfect and impeccable. When one reads the Srimad Bhagavatam, it's very, very clear. But the mood of a Mahabhagavata personality like Prahlad is, I don't have any spiritual qualification. So he's speaking it. When he was speaking to his classmates, or when he was offering prayers to the Supreme Lord, when he's in the mood of serving, he exhibits perfect understanding. But when he's regarding himself, he regards himself with great humility. Great humility. And here's the commentary. Prahlad insists that even before he fell into materialistic sense gratification by becoming a king, he had never been completely free from demoniac qualities. In particular, he was expert, like other demons, in expounding impersonal theories about the eternal soul. Such theories, full of bad scholarship, try to establish the perfection of life in impersonal knowledge without devotion to the Supreme. Prahlad thinks that by living with the daityas and imbibing their attitudes, he became infected with this taste for impersonal speculation. This taste is adhama, base and contemptible. Maybe that's supposed to be adharma. No, it's adhama, degraded. Because it subverts the ecstatic personal exchanges of bhakti rasa. Commentary. So now Prahlad continues. So how can any pure devotion appear in me that would signify the Lord's mercy? I see proof of my lack of devotion when I ponder the wickedness of Banasura. So what's the wickedness of Banasura? Banasura was the son of one of the descendants of Prahlad Maharaj. So he's saying, just see how bad I am. One of my descendants is this wicked Banasura who's an offender to Lord Krishna. So there's more proof that I'm a fallen, conditioned person. He goes on, I have heard some say that now, after arresting and imprisoning Bali, the Lord stays here in Sutala as the doorman just to keep him captive. So you know that narration. After Vamana requested three paces of land, and the third two paces covered the whole creation, the third was his head, his foot was placed on the head of Bali. He tied up Bali with ropes, thus humiliating Bali, and the whole scene ensued about was that right or not right, and what should be done with Bali. And then Lord Vamana had him released and gave him the benediction that he would preside, although he lost his kingdom having surrendered it. He would become the ruler of Sutala, and that he himself would come and be his doorman in his planet, in his abode, always protecting him from the invasion of intruders. Personally, Lord Vamana came there to do that. And so there, Bali has the opportunity to render direct service to Vamanadeva again and again and again, regularly. And it's mentioned in the Bhagavatam also that Prahlad Maharaj was also sent there. Prahlad Maharaj, the grandfather of Mali Maharaj. So the reference is that some say that I'm so fortunate that I'm residing in the same place where Lord Vamana is the gatekeeper of my grandson. But I don't even see Lord Vamana. Here's the commentary. Narada met Prahlad on the planet Sutala, the domain of Bali Maharaj. As mentioned before, Prahlad was staying there for some time on the invitation of Lord Vamana. Prahlad heard from reputable sages that Sri Vamana Dev stays at Bali's gate just to keep Bali from escaping Sutala Loka. This opinion is expressed to Banasura by his friend Kushmanda in Sri Harivamsa. There, Kushmanda depicts Bali as a prisoner of Sutala. So he's on the pretext of saying, I will protect you. Prahlad is saying, actually, he's just making sure that Bali doesn't get out again and make havoc in the universe. So Kushmanda says to Banasura, my dear king, your father, Bali, has been defeated by the strength of Vishnu and is now in captivity. But in the future, he will be able to escape through the vast ocean and somewhere obtain a kingdom. Bali's residence in Sutala is further described as imprisonment in the section of the Uttarakhanda of Valmiki's Ramayana that narrates Ravana's conquest in the region of Patala. By this argument, so the reference is Ravana and his attempt to dominate the whole universe, he enters into Patala and then tries to come to Sutala and is repelled because Lord Vamana is the gatekeeper and keeps him out. So Ravana goes away. But Ravana, some comment is there that Ravana considers that Bali is being held captive by the gatekeeper, Lord Vamana. So earlier in this text, Narada has glorified Prahlad in this way. Oh, best of the Vaishnavas, why should I say that Lord Mukunda has been conquered only by you? Your grandson Bali, the chief of the Daityas, has conquered him. So Prahlad is refuting that. Conquered him. He's his prisoner. Conquered him by his love, but no, he's his prisoner. Narada might respond by pointing out that Prahlad has the opportunity to see Lord Vishnu in Sutala Loka whenever he wants. Whereas Shiva, Brahma, and the other great demigods can rarely see him, Prahlad here anticipates and defeats this idea by saying, it would be evidence of the Lord's mercy on me if I could see him always. But at the moment, I don't even know where he is. And I do not know how I can freely have his audience. Sometimes he shows himself here, but not continuously. Rather, next text, only on rare occasions. Some persons like Ravana can see the Lord here, as did Ravana. The Lord shows himself only when it suits his own purpose. In other words, to protect, which is his purpose, to protect his devotee, he appears. And otherwise, we don't see him. He says he's here, but we never see him. Only when he suits himself, he shows. He thus showed himself in this very place to Durvasa, because Durvasa had strong faith in being able to see the Lord. So here's the commentary. Very interesting, intricate explanations of stories. While invading the region of Patala, Ravana came to the entrance of Bali Maharaja's capital, but Lord Vamana, standing at the gate with club in his hand, refused to let Ravana enter and neglectfully kicked him far away. Prahlad argues that this is not proof of Sri Vamana's constant presence at Bali's door. The Lord appeared there on this occasion for the special purpose of protecting Bali from being conquered by Ravana. On another occasion, Durvasa, who was living at Kushasthali, the site of the future city of Dwaraka, was troubled by the demon Kusha and his cohorts, Kushasthali's ancient guardians. Durvasa went to Sutala to ask Lord Vamana for help. This is related in the Dwaraka Mahatmya of the Skanda Purana. And it was Narada Muni who had advised Durvasa to go to Lord Vamana in Sutala, and had assured Durvasa that he would indeed find Lord Vamana there. Because Durvasa had trusted Narada's words, Lord Vamana upheld the truth of Narada's words by allowing Durvasa his darshan. So Prahlad is arguing, you have this impression, it's a wrong impression. Here I am in Sutala, always with darshan of Lord Vamana. I don't know where he is. Durvasa can see him. Even Ravana can see him. I don't see him. I don't know where he is. How can I be there? This is a wrong glorification. You have a misunderstanding. Whenever one develops an intense desire to achieve the personality of Godhead, then one can obtain him. But the Lord's mercy, residing in a certain place, does not grant one his association. Commentary. The personality of Godhead does not give himself away to those whose desires are not absolutely pure. Only perfect love can induce him to reveal himself. If the Lord's presence in a place were a sufficient cause for realizing him, then every living being throughout the universe should already have attained him, since his form of Sri Vasudeva, the Super Soul, is all-pervading. You understand the argument? Super Soul is within the heart of every living being. So if the argument that because he resides close by is proof that one has received the mercy of the Lord, then everyone should be seeing the Supreme Lord. He's in our heart. He's at the gate. I don't see him. I know he's there because Durvasa has seen him and Ravana has seen him, but I don't see him. I don't have the qualification of devotion to see him. So I'm not a recipient of the Lord's mercy. If my Lord were always present here in person, why would I have traveled all the way to Naivisharanya to see him as Pitavas, the yellow garbed form of Narayan? We can say that by your mercy the Supreme Lord developed some love for me, and so I appear glorious. By his mercy, Narada is the one who instructed Prahlad when Prahlad was in the womb of his mother. So if there's anyone that's the recipient of the mercy, it's you, not me. But my greatness is just a tiny speck before the heaps of mercy the Lord bestows on his newer devotees. Newer devotees meaning that historically the incident of the appearance of Hiranyaksha and Hiranyakashipu is very, very early in the stage of creation or the history of the universe. So they're newer bhaktas. And those newer bhaktas, they're greater recipients, far greater recipients. anything that I have is just a speck compared to heaps. Commentary. Out of humility and respect for his guru, Narada, Prahlad now realizes that he should not have contradicted Narada's statements. Therefore, he now approaches the question from another angle. That is, acknowledging Narada's words, but reinterpreting them. Newer devotees like Hanuman, Prahlad says, were favored by the Supreme Lord much more. After a person has seen the great ocean, the sight of a small lake will no longer impress him. He goes on, O Narada, your heart overflows with causeless compassion. Why should I go on describing all my misfortunes, which simply make you unhappy? Instead, let me please consider the Lord's mercy on Hanuman of the Kim Purushas. Commentary. Since Narada is naturally compassionate to all suffering souls, Prahlad thinks Narada has been speaking just to encourage him with words of exaggerated praise. And so Prahlad thinks that to continue describing his own misfortune will distress Narada, his spiritual master, thus resulting in Guru Aparad. Narada cannot tolerate unhappiness in anyone, especially his own disciple. Since Narada is intent on finding the true recipient of the Supreme Lord's mercy, Prahlad tries to divert Narada's attention by proposing Hanuman as an alternative. Please note, so Narada, Prahlad goes on, please note, my Lord, that the Supreme Personality of Godhead appeared suddenly in his form of Nrisimha just to kill my father. And as soon as the Lord fulfilled his purpose, he at once disappeared. I haven't been able to see my Lord directly whenever I wanted. So when I saw him once on the shore of the ocean, it was just like seeing a dream. On the shore of the ocean, meaning that's where the palace of Ravana was. Commentary. Prahlad claims that since the time he saw Lord Nrisimhadeva, when the Lord appeared from a pillar to kill Hiranyakashipu, Prahlad has not much opportunity to see him again, or to speak of serve him and develop a personal relationship. When Lord Nrisimhadeva first appeared, Prahlad's spontaneous devotion was hampered by the novelty and shock of the moment, and by his own fear and reverence. The dramatic setting in the palace on the shore of the ocean and the presence of many demigods and sages made it difficult for Prahlad to freely express his love. This is described in some detail in Hari Bhakti Sudodaya. So now he's going to contrast Hanuman. But Hanuman is much more fortunate. For thousands, many thousands of years, he has enjoyed serving the Lord constantly without obstruction. Commentary. According to Sri Ramayan, Hanuman stayed with Lord Ramchandra on this earth for more than 11,000 years. Srimad Bhagavatam, however, says that he served his Lord directly for more than 13,000 years. In the ninth canto, Srimad Bhagavatam, it states, after Mother Sita entered the earth, Lord Ramachandra observed complete celibacy and performed an uninterrupted Agnihotri Yajna for 13,000 years. Without transgressing the religious principles, Lord Ramachandra, whose lotus feet are worshipped by devotees in meditation, enjoyed with all the paraphernalia of transcendental pleasure for as long as needed. Hanuman remained with Lord Ramachandra all this time. It's an argument. Recipient of the Lord's mercy? 13,000 years compared to just a moment. He goes on, Hanuman is the most powerful person when he was just a child, the demigods favored him with several wonderful benedictions. Thus he became immune to old age and death. Commentary. Hanuman's unique strength and his other qualities mentioned in this verse and the next enhance his unimpeded service to Lord Ramachandra. When he received the demigods' benedictions, as explained in Sri Ramayana, as soon as Hanuman was born, he saw the sun rising over his head and thought it to be some ripe fruit hanging from a tree. He jumped up to catch it and would have done so had Indra not intervened to protect the sun by hurling the thunderbolt weapon, striking Hanuman in the jaw and felling him unconscious to the earth. Hanuman's father, Vayu, greatly angered, decided to withhold the force of breath all over the universe, and all the denizens of the universe began to suffocate. To save the universal population, Brahma and the other chief demigods came to Hanuman, revived him, and granted him various benedictions. So more glorification of Prahlad, by Prahlad of Hanuman. Hanuman is free of all fear. He maintains great vows and he performs auspicious deeds. Outstanding among heroes, he's an exceptional servant of the Lord of the Raghus. Commentary. Among the vows of Hanuman, the greatest was his strict celibacy. His auspicious deeds included thoroughly studying all the Vedic literature and acquiring the skills of a poet. His heroism was proven by his exploits in battle. He was a hero in every sense of the word, as described by Bharata Muni, the authority on poetry, as follows. There is a mood called Veera, or heroism, and Lord Brahma has defined three kinds of Veeras, or heroes. The hero in charity, the hero in religion, and the hero in battle. There is also a mood of personal reciprocation called Veera, or heroism. So Hanuman exhibited that heroism in a maximum degree. And here's some examples. With playful disregard, he jumped across thousands of miles of fathomless ocean expertly. In the capital city of the Rakshasa king, he comforted Mother Sita in her distress. He boldly threatened his enemies, burned Lanka, and destroyed its citadel. When he brought back news of Sita, he received his master's deep embrace. Commentary. Hanuman audaciously challenged Ravana and the other Rakshasas by killing everyone. Ravana sent to stop him from destroying the Ashoka Grove. First, 80,000 Rakshasa soldiers, then the great demon Jambumali, then the seven sons of Ravana's ministers, and five commanders of Ravana's armies, and Ravana's own son, Akshaya Kumar. When Hanuman delivered to Lord Ramchandra the news that Sita was safe, the Lord was extremely pleased with him. In previous texts, Prahlad has listed Hanuman's accomplishments in order of increasing importance. Each additional deed is a more significant reason for Lord Ramchandra's accepting Hanuman as his personal associate. Okay. So Prahlad goes on. It was Hanuman who acted as his Lord's carrier, his tail serving as a royal white umbrella, his broad back as a comfortable seat for the Lord, and it was Hanuman who directed the project of bridging the ocean. Commentary. Hanuman is the best of all the Lord's carriers, including Garuda. When his master needed to travel from Kishkinda to the southern shore of the ocean, Hanuman carried him all that way on his broad, beautiful, soft back. In modern times, people take the liberty to carry umbrellas of any color they like. But traditionally, only kings were allowed to use white umbrellas. To equip Lord Ramachandra with this symbol of royalty, while in the forest, where manufactured umbrellas were not available, Hanuman provided his own white tail. Hanuman took a major part in building the bridge to Lanka, and he inspired the monkey labor force by hurling the largest boulders into place. Prahlad goes on. Hanuman helped Vibhishan fulfill Hanuman fulfilled the desires of Vibhisha, and he destroyed the military forces of the Rakshasas, and he had the special power to deliver the healing herb called Vishalya Karuni. Commentary. Vibhishan, even though Ravana's brother, always wanted to become a servant of Lord Ramchandra. Early on, Hanuman furthered Vibhishan's cause by telling the Lord about his saintly behavior. And when Vibhishan defected and crossed the ocean, Hanuman arranged for him to meet with the Lord. The acts of Hanuman mentioned up to this point correspond to those narrated in Sri Ramayana, the Kishkinda Kanda and Sundara Kanda sections of the Balya Kanda. From here on, beginning with this verse through another three or four verses, the accomplishments of Hanuman in the Yudha Kanda are briefly described. Srila Sanatana Goswami assumed that his readers were familiar with Valmiki Ramayana, and therefore left out further details of these stories to avoid unnecessarily increasing the size of his book. During the battle between Lord Ramchandra's armies and those of Ravana, Ravana's son, Indrajit, attacked in the middle of the night and resorted to magic and made all the monkey soldiers unconscious. At that time, Sri Lakshmana also played the pastime of becoming unconscious in order to fulfill a prediction by Brahma. On the advice of the physician Sushena, Hanuman set out to find the herb Vishalya Karuni, which alone could save the lives of Lakshman and the Vanara soldiers. He was able to bring the herb from the Gandamandana mountain not only once but twice. In the course of this, he had to defeat an army of Gandharvas, uproot the entire mountain because he couldn't distinguish which plant was the correct one, and swiftly return before it was too late. Prahlad goes on. Hanuman was the very life of his soldiers, always giving great pleasure to his divine Lord, and the Lord's younger brother Lakshmana, he devotedly served as the carrier for them both. Supremely intelligent and valorous, he brought victory for Lord Ramchandra. He added to the spotless fame of the Lord who killed the king of the Rakshasas. It was Hanuman who who gave encouragement to Mother Sita. And by the Lord's order, this Hanuman, the one true recipient of his master's favor, still lives in this world, though unable to bear separation from the Lord. Commentary. After Lord Ramchandra killed Ravana in battle, Hanuman brought the news to Mother Sita in the Ashoka garden. This brought Sita back to life, and her life became full in happiness when Hanuman took her to meet her husband. Thus Hanuman rendered many kinds of welcome service to Lord Ram and his dear devotees. After describing this, Prahlad next mentions the rewards Hanuman enjoyed for his service. While Lord Ramchandra was anointed the king of Ayodhya, he particularly favored Hanuman by presenting him Mother Sita's golden necklace. More than this, he granted Hanuman unflinching pure devotion to him. Since Hanuman's life with Lord Ramchandra after the victory was so fortunate, one might ask how Hanuman could ever have left the Lord's association. Why did he not return with Lord Ram to the eternal Ayodhya in Vaikuntha along with the other residents of the kingdom? The answer is that his Lord specifically asked him to stay behind on earth. By staying in this world, Hanuman gave all its inhabitants a much better chance to take the place, to take to the path of pure devotional service. Lord Ramachandra ordered Hanuman to make this service, make this severe sacrifice, because the Lord wanted to bestow such mercy on the conditioned souls. Living in separation from the Lord is Hanuman's most difficult and glorious service. Prahlad continued, Hanuman keeps himself alive by constantly hearing the glories of Lord Ram. Staying by the side of the Lord's deity, he is present even today with the same splendor as always. My dear spiritual master, Hanuman's greatness is well known from such scriptural statements like, quote, the chief of the monkeys became perfect by acting as the Lord's servant, and so forth. His servitude is proof of the Lord's mercy. Anyway, there's some details. Although Hanuman obtained from the son of Dasarath the boon of liberation without striving for it, he never wanted to accept liberation without the opportunity to serve. To that, Hanuman, I offer my obeisances. You certainly know glories of his that I haven't mentioned. Why not go to Kim Purusha Varsha, see him yourself, and be enlightened? So now Maharaj Parikshit is narrating to Uttara. My dear mother, Maharaj Parikshit said, the great sage Narada then jumped up from his seat and flew through the sky to Kim Purusha, all the while repeating, how wonderful, how wonderful. There in Kim Purusha Varsha, Narada saw Hanuman absorbed in worshipping Lord Ramchandra's lotus feet with various items from the forest, as if serving the Lord personally as before. Listening to the nectarian Ramayana recited by Gandharvas and other celestial singers, Hanuman was in ecstasy. His limbs trembled, tears poured from his eyes, the hair on his body stood on end. Commentary. These bodily symptoms of ecstasy are natural effects of maturely hearing the Lord's glories in the perfect consciousness of prema. The Gandharvas, living on Kim Purusha Loka, regularly sang from Sri Ramayana the glories of Lord Ramachandra, which Hanuman and his Rasika associates experienced as rasayanam, or a storehouse full of blissful tastes of the nine mellows of loving relationships with the Supreme Lord. Or, taking in another sense, rasayanam means the recitations were like a sweet tasting medicine, most effective for curing the disease of material existence and strengthening the natural life function of prema bhakti. So Maharaj Parikshit continues, Hanuman glorified the Lord with various prayers in prose and verse, most excellent compositions of his own. He also recited prayers composed by others, and he repeatedly offered prostrated obeisances. Out of joy, Narada cried, glories to you, Sri Raghunath, the beloved of Sri Janaki, all glories. All glories to the elder brother of Sri Lakshmana. Delighted to hear the names of the Lord, he worshipped. Hanuman jumped from where he stood and caught hold of Narada by the neck. Standing in the sky, meaning he was not touching the ground, Narada was overjoyed. With his feet he danced, and with his hands he wiped away the flood of loving tears from his eyes and from the eyes of the Lord of the Monkeys. Sharing Hanuman's unique mood of loving ecstasy, Narada spoke in a loud voice. Guess what he said? Oh, Blessed One, truly you are the dearest devotee of the Supreme Lord. Today, just by seeing you, I become dear to the Lord. Maharaj Parikshit said to his mother, in the blink of an eye, Hanuman became sober and bowed down to show respect to the sage among the demigods. Hanuman greeted him with reverence and brought him to the temple of Lord Ramchandra, the hero of the Raghus, so that Narada could offer obeisances. Narada paid obeisances to the Lord in Hanuman's temple, and then Hanuman carefully arranged for Narada to be seated. Narada felt, after offering prostrated obeisances to the deity of Lord Ramchandra, Narada felt multiple ecstasies, which involuntarily appeared in his body as trembling perspiration, auriculations, and choking of his voice. In such a condition, he started to play his veena, but he could not produce even one note. He began leaning on the veena, fearing he would fall to the ground. You are the greatest recipient of the mercy of the Supreme Lord. No one compared to you. Alas, you are always immersed in an ocean of ecstatic worship of the Lord, enjoying it as newer and newer at every moment. You are the Lord's servant, his friend, his carrier, his seat, his flag, his umbrella, his canopy, his fan. You are his bard, his advisor, his doctor, his general, his best helper, the expander of his infinite glories. Commentary. Here, Narada quickly summarizes Prahlad's description of Hanuman's glories. Hanuman serves Lord Ramchandra in various ways. As the Lord's friend, he enjoys the Lord's confidence and affection. Unless Hanuman had this special relationship with Lord Ram, the Lord would never have dispatched him to Lanka to deliver his message in his ring to Sita. Just like a battle flag, Hanuman always stood by the Lord's side. He was so tall that everyone could see him, even from a great distance. Seeing Hanuman first from afar, one could know that Lord Ramchandra was also present. And when Hanuman served as the Lord's vehicle, his mighty tail waved behind like a flag. The same tail also served as a royal umbrella, a sunscreen canopy, and a fan. in the role of the Lord's bard, Hanuman, sang the Lord's glories for his pleasure. Sometimes Hanuman carried out medical services also, treating the Lord's battlefield wounds. Thus, Hanuman was the most adept of all Lord Ram's monkey assistants. Narada goes on. Having surrendered yourself entirely to the Lord, having received His mightiest mercy, having dedicated your life to topics of His transcendental glories, you are always increasing the bliss of the devotees sheltered by Him. You are the best of saints, greater even than others, like Garuda. Commentary. Hanuman employed all his senses and abilities in Lord Ramchandra's service. Nothing was dear to him but that service. He had no attachment to his body or anything related to his body. But the pure glories of his Lord Ram, he cherished more than even life itself. He had been deprived of hearing and chanting those glories while separated from his Lord. Had that happened, he would have died in an instant death. Indeed, it is well known that wherever Ram Katha is recited, Hanuman comes to listen. He makes every endeavor to increase the bliss of Lord Ramchandra's devotees, both in ancient times and today. Among the Supreme Lord's personal attendants, Hanuman is the most glorious, even greater than Garuda, the exalted Vaishnava Yamunacharya. Alabandharu says in his Stotra Ratna, "You, Hanuman, are the Lord's servant, friend, carrier, seat, flag, canopy, and fan. You embody the three Vedas. Even in the presence of Garuda, you are graced with the honor of massaging the Lord's feet." Narada goes on. "Indeed, your devotion to the Lord is absolutely pure, for you consider nothing more valuable than the pleasure of serving Him, your most treasured possession. You delighted all His devotees by speaking to that most generous Lord these words, quote, 'Even though liberation destroys the bondage of material existence, I have no desire for liberation in which I would forget that you are the master and I am your servant.'" This is quoted in Rupa Goswami's Nectar of Devotion as well. Then Maharaj Prakshit changes the mood by saying, "Hanuman was now burning in a fire of separation from his master, Lord Ramachandra, and the fuel of hearing about the special mercy of the Lord's lotus feet had brought that fire to a blaze. For a while, he just cried sorrowfully. And then, calmed by the sage, he spoke." Commentary. "As dry firewood kindles quickly, Hanuman's ecstatic pangs of separation at once increased when he heard the Lord's special glories, especially the accounts of how the Lord had mercifully engaged him in personal service. Narada was able to console him with soothing words, and after crying for some time, Hanuman regained his composure. Hanuman said, 'O best of the sages, why are you doing this to such a wretched person? Devoid of the lotus feet of Sri Ramachandra, why do you make me cry by reminding me of how the Lord has neglected me?'" Commentary. "Because Lord Ramachandra appears like a human being with two hands and two legs, we would expect his lotus feet to be described by the dual form padam bhujabhyam instead of by the plural padam bhujai. In Sanskrit, plural forms are normally used to indicate more than two. But Hanuman here employs poetic license by using the plural form out of extreme reverence for the Lord with more than 2 feet. Hanuman continues, if I am truly the Lord's servant, then why did he forcibly abandon me when he took with him to the spiritual kingdom all his dear devotees, including Sugriva and all the residents of Kosala? You were very kind to me, Narada, because I have had the good fortune to engage in his service. You conclude that the Lord has given me his favor, but now he has descended on Mathurapuri, where he displays the summit of his opulences and his powers. All the mercy he has shown me cannot equal even a speck of the mercy he has shown to the saintly Pandavas, any more than a molecule of earth can equal Mount Sumeru. Commentary. Out of respect for the great sage, Narada, Hanuman finally acknowledges that what Narada has said about Lord Ramchandra's favoring him cannot be completely false. Lord Ram's order that Hanuman stay in this world in separation from him seemed to be cruel, but at least before that order the Lord had allowed Hanuman to serve him in various ways. It is only because of soft-heartedness, Hanuman says, that Narada considers him a favored devotee of the Lord. Hanuman says that Narada considers him, Hanuman, a favored devotee of the Lord only because Narada is very soft-hearted. Hanuman thinks that if Narada's judgment were less emotional, Narada would have concluded differently. Like every other Vaishnav whom Narada has approached, Hanuman wants to divert the sage's glorification to someone else. As the object of this diversion, he chooses the Pandavas. Hanuman compares the Lord's mercy on them to a huge Mount Sumeru, and the Lord's mercy on him is a speck of dust. So now he gives his reasoning about the Pandavas. By sending poison and many other calamities, one after another, the trouble of the Pandavas since their childhood, the Lord has deliberately shown their determination, their religion, their fame, wisdom, devotion, and ecstatic love. Commentary. As the invisible supersoul, Lord Krishna arranged for the Pandavas to undergo many troubles. He did this, however, only to broadcast their glories forever throughout the world. The Lord's pure devotees never perish, and what seems to be their suffering in this world is only for their benefit and glorification. I just one or two more and we'll Well, in three more verses, Hanuman finishes his glorification of the Pandavas, and then Narada takes off to see the Pandavas. So we'll just read through the next three, and then off to Hastinapur. The Lord acted as their servant, advisor, messenger, charioteer, and court attendant. He kept watch for them at night. He followed them on processions, and he even offered them praise and obeisances. Commentary. Not only did the Lord look after the Pandavas as the invisible supersoul, but he also dealt with them in various public exchanges of love. Sometimes he drove Arjuna's chariot. In Yudhisthira's court, he sat at the head of the assembly of advisors. Like an intimate servant, he anticipated the Pandavas' wishes, and at the Rajasuya sacrifice, he humbly cleansed the feet of every guest. He gave personal counsel to Yudhisthira and carried messages for him. On occasions, he would stand guard all night with sword in hand, and he would follow Yudhisthira in processions and offer words of praise like an ordinary subordinate. All Vaishnavas take delight in hearing the glories of the Pandavas, but one who has a special relationship with the Pandavas, like their grandson Maharaj Parikshit, spontaneously feels special ecstasy from such hearing. Just as Suta Goswami describes in the first canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, quote, this is canto 1, chapter 16, Maharaj Parikshit heard that Lord Krishna, who is universally obeyed, out of his causeless mercy rendered all kinds of service to the malleable sons of Pandu. The Lord accepted posts ranging from chariot driver to president to messenger, friend, and night watchman, according to the will of the Pandavas, obeying them like a servant and offering obeisances like one younger in years. When Maharaj Parikshit heard this, he became overwhelmed with devotion unto the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord. This verse spoken here by Hanuman does not explicitly mention the friendship between Krishna and the Pandavas, because all their exchanges were effects of this underlying relationship. Two more. Hanuman continues, out of his affectionate concern for them, what would the Lord not do? He was taking the combined roles of their servant, companion, and dearmost friend, and they took the same roles for him. Commentary. For the Pandavas, Krishna tolerated Bhishma's attacking and wounded him. For the Pandavas, Krishna broke his promise not to fight at Kurukshetra. In fact, for the Pandavas, Krishna would do anything. But a skeptic might ask, although God is kind to all his creatures, and certainly can be friendly to his devotees, why should he demean himself by trusting ordinary mortals and acting like their servant? Here Hanuman resolves such doubts. That is, Krishna's various services for the Pandavas were not a superficial show, but expressions of his true feelings. He was not at one moment posing as a friend, but being unwilling to serve, at another moment appearing willing to serve, but not showing friendship, at another moment making a show of friendship, but without genuine concern, and another showing loving concern without actually being a friend. Such inconsistent reciprocations are seen in material life, where there is no true love. Krishna's dealings with the Pandavas, however, were always free from duplicity. And the feelings were mutual. The Pandavas were ready to sacrifice anything for the happiness of Krishna. And the final text. Because the Lord resides constantly with the Pandavas, their capital city has become like a sacred forest where great sages perform austerities, and residing in that city awards one the same pious benefits as performing austere acts of penance. Commentary. Many renowned sages visited the Pandavas capital, Hastinapur, to see Sri Krishna because they knew very well that seeing him is the perfection of all austerities. As Narada told Yudhisthira, seventh canto of the Bhagavatam. All of you Pandavas are extremely fortunate, for the Supreme Personality of Godhead Krishna lives in your palace just like a human being. Great saintly persons know this very well, and therefore they constantly visit this house. Final paragraph. For devotees of Krishna, tapas refers not so much to troublesome austerities of the body as to one-pointed concentration of the mind. And for his pure devotees, fixing the mind on Krishna is not an austerity at all, but the highest pleasure. For the Vaishnavas in Hastinapur, the invaluable fruit of tapas, sattapalam, was to be able to see him constantly, sometimes physically, but always in their hearts. So with that, Narada is off and running to Hastinapur to see the Pandavas. Oh, actually, there's a little thing that follows. Hanuman wanted to go with him. He got so excited, glorifying the Pandavas, that he wanted to be in their company. He wanted their association. So he gets up with Narada and prepares to go. And then he sits back down and just says, I can't go. I'm just a monkey. Wherever I go, I make offenses. And this is the royal palace. What's a monkey going to do in the royal palace? He describes some of the things that he did as a monkey, urinating here and doing this and that, and I can't go. And he offers some very, very wonderful prayers, glorifying the devotees of the Lord and describing his mood of devotion to Lord Ramachandra, and says, I'll just sit here and wait. When the Lord wants, he can call me and I'll immediately be ready to do whatever service he wants. This is what he asked me to do. I'm just going to stay. And then Narada goes. Okay, so any discussion here? Yes.
Lord Shiva, you read that Lord Shiva was worshipping Mahapurusha Vishnu. Lord Shiva being a very detached personality, known as the most renounced person, and also there is the instance when he wanted even to see, enter into the Ratha dance of Krishna. Why would his meditation be on the Vishnu form? I always thought he was meditating on Krishna.
Again, there are different manifestations of Lord Shiva. As we read in Srimad Bhagavatam in the fourth canto, he's worshipping a different form than the Mahapurusha, as identified in Shiva Loka, the different manifestations of Lord Shiva with different moods and different objects of worship according to that mood. The prayers that he offers in to the Prajetas, his object of meditation is Lord Aniruddha. Elsewhere it's described he worships. Actually, this Mahapurusha is also interchangeably, the terminology is there, Lord Sankarshan. So, as we said in Gita Nagari, you weren't there. Very complex topic. Shivatattva is a very complex topic. Next.
Next one is Kali Maharaj, who appears from all these references that he is more or less held there as a prisoner in the Sudara planet. Vishnu is his doorkeeper, but more or less is guarding him to be there. But why Prahlad Maharaj had to go there?
He didn't have to go there.
He was sent.
It was part of the benediction that Lord Vamana gave him, that he would have the good fortune of his very, very elevated grandfather would reside on the same in the same place where he was presiding. So arrangement was made for Prahlad to take up his residence.
For a time period.
Yeah, Prahlad went other places first and perhaps also subsequently, but for some time period, yeah.
But his position is within the spiritual world, right?
Prahlad. Prahlad is, but well, one of the things that comes out in this discussion that you missed in Gita Nagari, but if you listen to the tapes, you'll catch it. When Lord Shiva encourages Narada to go to Vaikuntha and Parvati encourages specifically that he goes and seeks the association of Lakshmi, the understanding that Lord Shiva presents on the side is there are residents of Vaikuntha or persons who are equally attached to the Supreme Lord as the residents of Vaikuntha are, but they're especially merciful in that they give their merciful association to others outside of the realm of Vaikuntha. Knowing the compassion of the Supreme Lord, they forego his association and extend his association elsewhere, as in the case of Prahlad and Hanuman. I mean, specifically, that was the reason that Ramchandra requested Hanuman to remain, is to give bhakti to others.
That was my question regarding Hanuman. And also it was mentioned that he was worshipping Lord Ramachandra in Kimpurusha Varsha.
Yeah.
That is the place of the Gandharvas. Is that the place where the Gandharvas are living?
Well, it's also a place where the Kimpurusha Varsha, several entities in that category reside there. The Apsaras and Gandharvas and those who are you could say the entertainers of the heavenly planets, that's their residence, Kimpurusha Varsha. They're expert in the arts, which are that's the Kimpurusha Varsha is the place where Narada resided in two lifetimes before he was Narada. Lifetime before he was Narada was as the son of a maidservant. So before that, he was a resident. He was a Gandharva, engaged for a particular yajna. That's where they reside.
He
was doing practical service. He was feeling like that.
I wanted to how to understand that.
It's very deep. It's the humility of a Mahabhagavata. The humility of a Mahabhagavata sees everyone else is serving. except for one person, me. It's deep humility. And there are times it's worth making note that there, even within a Mahabhagavata, there are different moods. Just like when reading Hanuman, when Narada comes and sees the ecstatic worship of Hanuman, he's in ecstasy. He sees Narada, and he just swoons. He grabs Narada's neck, and they're dancing. But Narada glorifies him. His mood changes. He looks down, becomes very solemn, and very abjectly humble. Because in the face of a great personality offering great praise, it changes the mood. His heart can't bear that. When it's glorification of the Lord and His glories, and another mood. So, we find that fluctuation of mood in great personalities.
Personally, sometimes I go through this dilemma that when I'm trying to chant or read, I start feeling, what's the use of this? I should probably be doing some practical service. But when I'm doing something, when I feel, what's the use of it? I'm just crushed, everyone in the room should just sit and chant. So how to decide what's the right thing? And when doing that, how to also be humble?
I think you know the answer to that, but I'll say it anyways. Let's take those two positions, or each of the things that we do has a purpose. The purpose is pleasing the Lord, and in efforts to try to please the Lord, we become purified. So to guide and steady our efforts of devotion, we hear and chant. We hear the glories of the Lord, we chant the glories of the Lord, the name of the Lord, and songs and praise of the Lord, to bring our consciousness to the point of being fixed upon the Lord. And we further purify our senses by practical activity. Now what you just described, it's the unsteadiness of the mind. The grass is greener over there, the grass is greener over there. The mind is not fixed on the purpose. Rather, it's a lack of presence in each activity. When we're chanting, there's a time for each thing. When chanting, our attention should be with that. When studying, our attention should be with that. When serving in practical manner, our attention should be with that. How that is pleasing to the Lord. But each thing has its place. Each thing has its place. We dedicate ourselves at the time that we're doing each thing to that thing. If the mind is absent, and we'll get less than full benefit. What to speak if the mind is dragging us away? So then one doesn't get absorbed in any one thing because the mind is chanchala. So each thing has its purpose. And how to remain in the mood of humility? This is service that's recommended for me by the scripture, by the spiritual master, by sadhu. I'm submitting myself to that indication. With faith, I'll become a little purified and Krishna will be pleased. That's humility. I'm a constitutional position is that of servant.
In the exchange between Narada Muni and Prahlad Maharaj, it's an interesting thing. It's a spiritual master and a disciple.
Yes, it is interesting. Dynamic.
I didn't understand how. Is it usually? It's usually awe and reverence. That's the usual move. How does, in this case, Prahlad Maharaj answer Narada Muni? Because if he had done either way, it would have been not the right etiquette.
Yeah. It's an extraordinary circumstance. With an extraordinary pair of devotees. It's more on the bhava platform than it is on the vidhi platform. And therefore, our commentators note that he catches himself. I have to get back to the vidhi platform and be respectful to my. But he's. The consistently in this whole part one, we're hearing very, very strong descriptions of the humility of these different Vaishnavas. Very strong is their humility. So, when they're being glorified in this way, it's too much to bear. So their feelings, outpourings of feelings, in reducing that glorification and redirecting that glorification predominates.
I forgot the reference sheet. When Prahlad Maharaj makes a reference to newer devotees, what is that?
I tried to explain. Newer means in chronology. So, chronologically, the appearance of Lord Nisringadev took place before Ramchandra. In the order, in the sequence of the manifest pastimes of the Lord. Anything else? Yeah.
That's very deep. Sometimes Krishna are dependent.
Sometimes Krishna what?
Dependent.
Krishna likes to act in a dependent way with his devotee.
I would say, like the case of Kapana, whether Krishna probably would never fight in the battlefield because of his devotees.
As in the case with Krishna promising not to fight on the battlefield, but then he breaks his promise.
Is that act independent?
Is that what?
Is that act independent?
Well, it's not exactly acting dependent. It's two other things. He's fulfilling the desire of Bhishma, and he's protecting his devotee, because Bhishma knows that Krishna will do that. So he's satisfying Bhishma's desire to see him do that. Uphold and protect his devotee. Even he's given, he'll break his own promise to protect his devotee. Then he just loves that.
It's just a little dust for us to understand, because we all are from scriptural point, and you know, we are dependent on Krishna. Of course, he's all independent, but sometimes because of the Mahabhagavat level, we act in that way. I got one more comment. Hanuman saw Sita Devi putting kumkum on her head. And he says to Sita, "What are you doing?" He said, "Oh, my dear Lord Ram likes it." And he just dashed around the corner. And he came back red. Because Hanuman, when he became, after the whitest, the whole body was red, so he had just sent his kumkum. He said, "What are you doing, Hanuman?" He said, "My Lord loves it." So he just,
whatever pleases the Lord, Hanuman's ready to do that. The double pad.